when you think about Brian Kerr interviewing for that job, I mean, one of the sort of requirements or job description parts for him going into that job would have been, like, you know, duties, enticing back Roy Keane. You know what I mean? How, like, I can't imagine how difficult it must be going into a job thinking that, given what we know about Roy before and even since his playing days, and how difficult a fella he can be. I imagine that was probably a really hard thing to A, interview for, and yeah. B, then go and think about how you're going to do it. And again, you look at the names that would have been associated. Brian Robson would have gotten back sooner, I'd say, just because we mentioned Brian Robson previously. Yeah. They're mates, exactly. But I can't imagine how most of the others would.
Philip Trucier,
yeah. Frank Stapleton, even, doing the old Apparee match voice again.
Hitters.
Yeah. So when we last left our hero, we'd failed to reach the Euros, but Kerr had an ace up his sleeve in the form of returning Roy Keane. That was sort of the main sort of middling part of these two that connected. There was rumours, I think, going back into the previous campaign. And actually, if you go way, way back, one of Kerr's early training sessions, he talked about, you know, one of the first sessions he did with the team, having to, like, work on shape, and it was really important to him at the time. He was like, this has to go well. And he talked about a story where he remembers someone sort of giving him the nod, come here, you have to step away. He had to step away, leave it one of his coaching team. And it was essentially just to let him know that the message was that Roy Keane had retired from international football. Now, this isn't his first campaign, so obviously went on to change. But, yeah, like, at that point, it was like, grand, that's put to bed. I don't have to worry about that anymore. It must have been quite tough, I imagine, in a job like that, because we haven't really seen it since in any job, I don't think, to try and entice someone out of retirement for something so on such a large public scale.
Yeah, I guess
you have players that kind of come in and out of international football, but not really in as acrimonious fashion as that. Mm. And not really, it's not really ever been a coach's job to bring them back. I know maybe you could talk about Scotland recently would have had a load of players retired, and
it's never really a huge argument though. No. It's usually this player is going to retire
because they're all of a poor enough class at the moment, the Scottish team. You're not really exactly getting a whole bunch of top quality players to come back in. But
that was in glass houses.
Yeah, exactly, you know, at this point. But certainly at that point, that was a huge element of his job. He held quite a few chats with Roy, or a couple of chats at the very least. I can't remember where the story came from. I definitely heard Brian talk about this before, kind of going in a car to speak to Roy Keane, being led down. Again, that must be such a weird feeling in your gut. I can't imagine even as a journalist how you're going to make sure my phone's on silent, all that kind of stuff you'd be thinking, yeah, kind of going into it. But meeting him in a hotel and having a chat, and I imagine even then the subjects that would have been covered back then, I mean, you're talking
about, will you come back to the team? Why won't you come back to the team?
You're not going to be captain. and apparently what Kerr said to him is, you know, you would have had, I think, Matt Holland and then Kenny Cunningham at the time, sort of in the captaincy. I'm not sure if it was much of a handover there, but Kerr essentially said to Roy, and I think it's kind of ballsy enough to even say to him, you know, the captain has to be at every game. And Roy, at that point in his career, was probably getting old and injured and already skipped quite a few friendlies with the Republic of Ireland. So for Kerr to say that, I mean, it could have really fallen apart at that point to kind of say, apparently Kerr said, "Not you don't have to play every game, but you have to be there. You have to be tactically aware. You have to be in conversation and stuff like that. And you have to essentially have the respect of all the players and be there, be, you know, quite with the players." And I suppose that's a problem for someone who's maybe split the nation, is you were never going to regain the whole respect.
I suppose the opposite side of that is if you're Brian Kerr coming in, and obviously, look, you haven't had you've had senior jobs, and maybe not senior jobs that a lot of the professionals in the team.
Yeah, well, his first senior professional job would have been.
Yeah. Well, I suppose Pat's was professional enough, but yeah, the first kind of major job where he's working with, I guess, you know, world class players or players close to that. So, he would have already been trying to, I guess, win over the respect of a lot of people. Maybe obviously Robbie and Damien, and having worked with him underage, they would have automatically already respected him. But maybe the others, he kind of had to prove, not just to them, but to the public in general, that he wasn't just going to come in and let Roy Keane dictate everything, that he was actually the manager, and he has to put his own sort of stamp on things. And even see it with you know, Gareth Southgate a while ago, even after all that's gone on in terms of, you know, getting to a World Cup semi-final, there was still the impression that maybe he kind of still needed to put his authority on the team. And that's where the whole you know, banning Raheem Sterling for the altercation with Joe Gomez came from. Maybe it was a kind of, I guess, putting a marker down and showing who the boss of the team is, even if it's making a mountain out of a molehill in that situation. But I think certainly for Kerr, he probably needed to knock you off the perception that he was just going to let Roy Keane stroll back into the team and just dictate whatever he wants and show up to whatever game he wants.
Yeah, and he didn't exactly stroll back into the team, but almost exactly 2 years after Saipan, weirdly enough, Keane came back for a friendly against Romania. And I think he played, I think it was around about 7 or 8 games after that, certainly one or two as a sub here or there. The last 3 or 4, from what I remember, after he'd left United, he wasn't really ever, you know, the Keane we'd remembered beforehand, and it wasn't that he was nowhere near as good, it was just that his body was clearly going.
Keane's even spoken about that, you know, the only reason that the Celtic Man United let him go in the first place was that they kind of saw that, you know, he wasn't getting back to where he was.
But that does have to go down, like, he integrated him into the team. We're not coming back talking about, you know, Keane as a problem, or we're talking, you know, it's a big success for Brian Kerr at that point, managing that, pulling that off, because it would have been, as I said, one of the main elements of the job. A lot of them would have talked about how he's going to
come
back.
I think enough time had passed that you could kind of bring him in and maybe it wouldn't be so disruptive. And
well, 2 years,
yeah. As well, at that time, you know, in the 2002 World Cup, it was obviously Mark Hinsler and Matt Holland took over. Mark Hinsler and Matt Holland took over the... I called the guy called Mark Mike today as well. I'm just...
Mark Mike Holland, kids.
Mark. Yeah, exactly. But Mark Hinsler and Matt Holland, they kind of stepped up for that World Cup, but those two players were very much kind of coming towards the end of their sort of careers as well at that point, and kind of Hinsler was phased out fairly quickly. Holland kind of quit after the end of the Kerr's last campaign. So he obviously had Graham Kavanagh, who was a Premier League footballer and very much kind of in the Keane mould, in the sense that, you know, he had a big square head and he kind of went around kicking people. And, you know, he's a very good player. And
yeah, it sounds like you're right.
We were talking off the air earlier about that just before Keane came back. And I remember even going to the game, it was sold as a package of 2 friendlies. It was when they were kind of changing things around.
Oh man!
it was when they'd taken the seats out of the West Stand or something for some reason, and it was like a terrace seating, and they sold these 2 friendlies, and you had to buy tickets for both of them, and you know, went along. And the second one, I think, was Brazil, and kind of you had to buy the tickets for the other one to get to see Brazil. And even we were kind of looking at the teams there, and kind of the
caliber of, like, the ridiculous, as you said, Graham. And no offense to Graham Kavanagh, but this is sort of what I'm saying in terms of the team slightly fading off in terms of quality, and you kind of see that in these few years.
But, like, I'm not saying anything about Graham Kavanagh.
No.
Looking at the Brazil team,
I'm saying
team,
the lack, like, of depth, I think, more so, is obvious at that point.
Yeah, this is February 2004. You're looking at the Ireland team. Still some good players in it, you know, Stephen Carr, Kenny Cunningham, John O'Shea. You know, those players will get into, you know, most Irish teams of any era. Robbie Keane, but Shea Given, obviously. But looking at the Brazil team, Dida, Cafu, Roberto Carlos, Lucio, Rocky Jr., Gilberto Silva, Kaká, Cleberson, Ronaldinho, Zé Roberto, Ronaldo. What's that? Four world players of the year in one team, and then
one absolute shitbox in Cleberson.
Then on the bench, Ed Meilson, Julio Baptista, and my favourite memory of that game is actually after about 10 minutes, when Gilberto Silva, who was kind of, you know, pulling up trees with Arsenal at the time, and was kind of the midfield guy who kind of provided a bit of steel, and Kavanagh decided to go in and put his mark on him after a couple of minutes, and ended up absolutely completely lamping him and had to be taken off. I think he missed a couple of months for Arsenal. So
friendly match.
Yeah.
Graham,
that's what I mean. No, he was that sort of kind of player. He's combative, and, you know, he's also a very talented player. But the point I was making, which I think I made the opposite one now, was
for months in friendly matches.
I was trying to make the complete opposite point of the way it's come out, but Kavanagh, you know, was playing at a high level, and I think for a while he kind of did look like he could fill that Roy Keane role.
Definitely,
maybe
he's
the sort of player who kind of take the scruff of the neck and score 2 goals when you're struggling against Cyprus or something like that. But, you know, he was, you know, he maybe filled a bit of a gap in there, and we kind of looked okay. We looked like we were going somewhere, and maybe weren't so, you know, we didn't need Roy Keane to the same extent.
But I think player-wise, as you said, like in a role, that might work. Mm. But when you're talking about, I mean, we're talking about Brazil team, you're talking about like that aura that some of those players would emit, and Roy is a whole other kettle of fish. You think of every young player, you think of every player that's started working with him, by the end of working with him, they're sick of it. But any player that start working with him at that point, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like remember that 2002 qualifying campaign, you know, Keane did drag Ireland through a few of those games.
Let's even highlight in this, because I imagine he lifted the level again, as he generally tried to do with standards. But it's a good thing we're not coming away from this kind of talking about, you know, him falling out with people again, because that's the overriding thing. That's why it's a success for Brian Kerr. So let's start into the campaign then, because we've already killed a whole load of time talking about a bunch of other stuff, which is necessary, because it's just such a... It really is. You kind of forget how much it's loaded.
I'd rather talk about Cafu than anything else.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so would Brian Kerr. Brian Kerr ever talk about Cafu. He absolutely loved him. What a fella. That's what he said about Cafu. Genuinely is.
I went down to a bakery down in Kerry. There was a family bakery.
John the Baker?
Yeah. Not Pat the Baker. John the Baker. And I ran a bakery for a couple of years.
So are you any good?
No, I didn't bake. I'll tell you, some of the best principles I've learned came from running that bakery. I remember going down the first week, there was £100,000 owed to the sheriff. And the health inspector was in within 2 weeks saying he was going to close the place. So I told the health inspector, if he wanted to lose 40 jobs in Kerry, that was his business. He lived in Kerry. I think it was a bit ballsy, maybe, you know. And the sheriff, I wrote 10 post-data checks out for a year, 10 grand a month. And thankfully, they all cleared. The one thing I've learned, like, we built the stadium, the Viva Stadium, when I got involved with the FAI. I think the same business principles apply to any business. So I didn't know how to build a stadium. I didn't know effectively how to run a pub. I knew the other side of the pub like any young lad.
So yeah, really promising start in this campaign. A 3-0 win over Cyprus. Clinton Morrison on the score sheet for that one, who sort of became more involved in this campaign. I was never sold on Clinton Morrison, I have to say. He was never, and you start to see, I think early in this campaign, he has a really good spell and then just fades. And I thought that was pretty much him for me. He was too patchy. He didn't.
I think the reason why I named them, why I brought up Damien Duff and Keane playing up front under McCarthy in the previous round of this podcast, was that there was probably a similar situation when you had Morrison going in with Keane. Two very similar players, two kind of fox in the box, try to get in behind, use their pace a little bit. I know Keane kind of lost that towards the later years, but they both kind of were those similar sort of players. And I think when the two were up with each other, because he was a bit kind of taller and more rangy, he maybe was used in maybe the way that Gary Doherty might have been used, whereas you probably wanted to be seeing the two of them running off each other. And we would have had to play a different way, which I don't think particularly came about, whether that was by design or accident.
We had Robbie Keane, but we needed someone to partner Robbie Keane, so by default nearly it was like, oh, we can't use Robbie Keane in the way we want to.
Exactly, Robbie has to play, so whoever else is picked is the guy with Robbie.
Just on that game then, Andy Reid's debut, and he scores a 30-yarder, an absolutely magnificent goal. He cuts in, as Andy Reid could do with space, which is the problem, I think, with Andy Reid's game towards the end, was he wasn't a player who...
He's too focused on astronautics.
A little bit. But also, the fact that once you closed him down, you could eliminate his threat, and I think that was another element that people forgot in the years gone by. But as you see in this campaign, he gets on very well with Brian Kerr, as we saw in the subsequent years.
Big part that's of why he was played out in the wide a bit, because it's more space.
But he absolute beautiful goal, 30-yard, he kind of curls it to the far corner. And then a penalty. One of the worst attempts to save a penalty you'll ever see. The keeper goes the right way. It's Robbie Keane slotting home. He nearly ends up standing over. He goes the right way, but he's sort of like, well, I didn't dive right, so now I'm just standing here. Just standing over the ball by
I'm not saving it.
Yeah, it's gone at this point. I guessed it right, though. You saw that. Switzerland 1, Ireland 1 was the result that followed after. Again, Morrison, for me, I started thinking, well, maybe I'm wrong. Look, get on board with him at this point. And who equalises? Our old friend, Hacken Yakin.
Don't think that's his full name, is it?
Yeah, it is.
Is that a Swiss name?
That's his brother, because there was a brother, wasn't there? Can't remember. Begin with an M, but
Murat or something.
But a decent result away. Still maybe the concern with Switzerland, you know, as I said, didn't like them at this point. They were like the Denmark of back then. You're like, oh, God, I know we got a result already, but they're going to kill us at home or something. Mm. And then we get to the point where you've got the obvious problem with Brian Kerr's reign. The next two games are 0-0 draw away with France.
Should have won.
Yeah, should have won, and a lot of people making that point. Now, they were missing quite a few players, and Anne and Vieira didn't play, and a few
was
like
John
that.
John O'Shea missed the open goal on that?
I can't remember. I think you might be right on that, yeah. But even by any measure, great result. By any measure, by today's measure, by any measure, great result still. Then an abject 2-0 win against Faroe Islands, where Robbie Keane's two goals gave him that, sort of took the headlines. You know, he was the all-time top scorer at that point, so he overtook Quinn's record. But
Faroe's obviously saw enough in that performance
to give Brian, yeah. But it was a sour enough atmosphere after that. A lot of people were really upset at that game, and it was the style. It was 90 minutes of a very bad, I think one of them was a penalty as well. So really, you're only broken them down for you know, one in-play goal.
But if we qualified, nobody would remember.
Yeah, a little bit. But it kind of gave you a little bit of a flag of what was to come with back-to-back draws against Israel, and that sort of undid a lot of good work. That's some
Israel
of the big
should
away
have
games.
Won two of those games.
Yeah, well. Yeah, but it undid a lot of the good work from those two early away results, like in France and all that. So you look at, you know, 1-1 in the first game away in Israel.
Last-minute goal after sitting back for the last half hour.
Exactly, and that was, the problem.
Again, now, your boy Clinton scored from an impossible angle.
That's what I'm trying to say. It was probably his best ever Irish goal anyway, because it's...
No, China.
Oh, sorry, yeah, because we did talk about this in the greatest goal, and I've completely paused it.
His most still, important goal.
Yeah, but it's a it's a cracking finish, though. It was one of those sort of...
There's no way he should have scored.
Yeah, narrow angle, and he kind of does it off the inside of his boot while sort of nearly with his back to goal. So the ball comes at him, and he sort of flicks it near post. And then, as you said, a sort of 90th minute sort of low ranger from deep. And one thing you will notice in these campaigns as well, closing down from centre-backs or centre midfielders from these angles seems to catch us a lot.
But I think that's what we'll get onto is kind of the attitude towards games where, you know, we would take these leads and then it was sitting back. And, you know, anybody who watches football can see the more you sit back, you know, the less pressure you put on the ball, the less risks you take, these are the things you leave yourself open to.
The 2-2 draw to follow then, where we're 2-0 up, and that was pretty much it. We started off with Ian Hart getting back in the team. I thought he'd be done after 2002 World Cup, but he's back in there. Standard sort Scoring of curler goals. Free kick from him, which he did right throughout his career, which was absolutely class. And then a goal that shows you exactly why people used to bang on about Andy Reid for so long. He hits, must have been a 40, 50-yard ball right down the centre of the pitch, right onto Robbie Keane's toe, and Robbie dinks it over the keeper, and you're thinking, right, back on track here, we've slipped up, we've let a few results go by, but we're 2-0 up at this point.
You're probably thinking that even, you know, it's going far better than we would have thought.
Exactly, yeah. And then, to be fair, right, the goal, this is one thing you gotta put into this with a little asterisk. Some unbelievable goals scored against us, because Shea was in good form around this time as well. I'm not sure who the defender was for Israel, but it was definitely Ben Ayoun who would have been there at the time. It was his cross, and he caused us all sorts of trouble in that game, I remember, but I hated him as well for a while after, yakking and himself. But cross in, and it's like a sort of back flick header from like the edge of the box nearly from the Israel defender, and then followed up by a penalty John O'Shea judged to have felled Ben Ayoun in the box. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, it wasn't.
Never a fell. Never a penalty.
I don't think it'd be usually be given, but there was no reason to have his arms around them in the first place. It's just
it was one of those. But anyway, they smashed that home, and we're in real trouble after that, because you look at the games we've got left. So we go on to beat the Faroes again, 2-0. So just two solid 2-0.
I'm going to talk about the Israeli goalkeeper. He was voted the second most hated man in Ireland or something like that for...
Well, I was going to make this a love-in and more about Brian Kerr and reuniting with Roy Keane, but if you want to talk about the hatred, that is, as is your usual want, go on.
Well, I just remember he got Andy O'Brien sent off by pretending to be hurt. And then
in the first or second game, was that?
The second game.
Yeah.
And I think that was when it was 2-1, then they got the penalty, and then I think he spent the rest of the game kind of rolling around.
I wonder who was
injured.
Number one.
Bertie or something.
Was it? Thierry's still to come.
No, this was in like 2000.
Oh, okay, sorry. But yeah, so there's the two Israel games.
Dudu, that was his name.
Dudu. He definitely used that. Someone used that at the time in the papers. 2-0 win against the Faroes, as I said then. And following that, we had a big performance against France. And I think the games against France sort of sum up, I've used this sum up Brian's thing a lot, but like you can see it's these kind of games we didn't really go and... And do it against the bigger teams when we're in the position to defend. It's the Israel performances you'd expect against France. And unfortunately, that didn't happen enough. So when we played France, we were like, oh, this actually isn't going too bad. We might have a chance here. And I remember thinking sort of first half, we might get away with this if we can just, you know, nick a bit of inspiration from somewhere. If we can hang on, we should be able to get through. And as is always the problem in these games, you're sort of, when you're at that point, you need something from a big game like this. It always seems like someone, you know, has a bit of magic, someone from the opposite team. And Thierry Henry, unfortunately, had just that. He hit an absolute beauty curl in the top corner after Wiltord sort of battled with, it might have been John O'Shea, and sort of knocked it down. So it was sort of edge of the box again. A lot of goals kind of conceded from that area. Incredible curling finish into the top corner. One of those, like, do you remember, like, I'm not sure which video game it was FIFA or Pro Evo, and you could hit R1 on the PlayStation, whichever, sort of these finesse shots where the player would nearly stop it as, like, turn his body to kind of angle it. And that's what it looked like on Ray, didn't it? It was an absolute glorious goal.
No backlift in the Guinness.
Exactly, yeah.
Hanging them anyway.
Oh, outrageous.
But I think we were talking about, you know, Keane coming back and how kind of unprecedented that is. You have to remember that when that, before that campaign started, Thuram, Zidane and McAuley all retired. Mm-hmm. And they basically came back for that game.
Yeah, you're right.
They were probably the difference on the day in terms of making France a bit more solid. Henry. And Henry, yeah.
You know, you're right, yeah. Yeah, like it was. And that's why I say, like, with those performances against France, they, you know, there was big performances in this team. They had big players at the time. We talked about Duff at times stepping up and being an unbelievable player. And I think this is where we sort of fell down, because we talk about the kind of holes that are in the team as well. There is a few players who are kicking on at this point. Even the likes of your Stephen Carrs, who's an excellent player, but he was probably just about coming to the end of his international career. You would have had Ian Hart somewhat still involved. I think 2002 was really the end of his career, although he did have that spell in Spain where things started to work out for him again as well. But you know what I mean? There's a few of these kind of elements of fading players. And you look at the Cyprus game after that France game. So we beat Cyprus 1-0. Stephen Elliott, sleeves, as he's known, with his first goal, I think. But he definitely came in and got involved at that point.
I want to say his first goal was a friendly, but I might be wrong on that.
Yeah, well, maybe his first competitive goal. But it probably tells you, again, we're swapping and changing. So, like, Doherty had been the previous. He'd been sort of filling in the gaps. Morrison at the start of this, he'd been filling in the gaps. Stephen Eddy at this point.
John Goodman never quite happened, did he?
No, he did not. And then it's the Swiss again. So we end up, after all of this, needing to get a result against the Swiss again. And all we can do is unfortunately, play a 0-0 draw with them at this point, didn't they? We were without Roy Keane, so he'd play his last ever game against France in that time, actually, we should have highlighted. And then Damien Duff's missing for the Switzerland game as well. And not only that, as he will do, it was a risky move, but Kerr comes in for a lot of flack, taking off Robbie Keane towards the end of that Swiss game when we're looking for a goal.
It was just a poor game, I think it was.
It was.
I remember.
And the problem was there was too many of those in that era, and we weren't used to it at that time. As I said, 17 years down the line, if Brian Kerr goes in and does that job now, we're kind of like, oh, we've seen a bit of this. Back then, we hadn't. We'd seen some of the highest, you know.
I remember the deflation of that night. I remember just watching the match, just being at it, and just, you know, you could see that Ireland was pumping the ball up and just hoping something would happen, which is completely feeding into the hands of the Swiss players, because they knew any time you jump for a player, just go down, you get a free kick. And that was kind of the way, that was the kind of way that game kind of petered out a little bit. But it was just, I suppose it was fitting that you know, Kerr's reign started off with Kevin Kilbane being pelted with a Swiss Army knife and finished by having the lack of incision against the Swiss.